Welcome back to A View from the Couch. I am Rich.
I am Jen.
And we're going to throw a curveball at you here, guys, because last time, last episode, in our Knock Knock Smackdown, we said that we were going to do a Lather, Rinse, Repeat arc. But as we got digging into it, we realized that one of those three was not like the others. But we did find another connection to all three of the movies that we're going to talk about. Jen, why don't you tell everybody what we've done? What madness have we brought upon ourselves?
So when we were watching through and kind of researching a little bit on here, we kind of thought the Looper movie maybe didn't quite fit. But we realized that Emily Blunt was in Looper and she was in Edge of Tomorrow. And there's also another movie out there where she has some kind of effect on future, and I don't know if it's time travel or whatever, but it's the Adjustment Bureau. And so we decided to have a new arc, what we're going to call Emily Blunt Saves the Future. And we're going to cover Edge of Tomorrow, Looper, and the Adjustment Bureau.
That's right. Like I said, curveball, but you know what? And it's not anything against Source Code. I think Source Code is a fantastic flick. We'll cover that at some point. But so Looper felt like the odd film out because it wasn't necessarily about repeating stuff. And rather than try and find a third repeating movie, we actually watched four movies for this because we watched Source Code when we realized what was going on. And then we watched Adjustment Bureau because it came to light, like Jennifer said, that the lead actress, Emily Blunt, was in all three, and all three of them have to do with saving the future, whether that be your own personal future or the future of the world, as we will talk about today. Jen, had you seen Edge of Tomorrow once or twice or a bunch of times before in a loop?
I have seen this a couple times before. I think the first time I watched it was maybe a little over a year ago.
Wow.
And then a couple months after that, I watched it again because it was one that I wanted to see again. So this is my third time seeing this.
This is your third time seeing this science fiction movie, and you don't like science fiction. So what up with
There's
that?
Enough action in here, I think, that I can get around some of the science fiction. I do have to say in these three movies, I have to kind of shut my brain off a little bit because when I start thinking about how this stuff actually works, I start getting really confused. And then I think I start overthinking things and then I don't enjoy it as much, where if I just kind of just surface watch it, you know, just watch it for enjoyment's sake, I think I do a little better. Otherwise, these things get a little time travel, man. That stuff is very confusing for me.
So you didn't like Back to the Future?
I have not seen Back to the Future since I was a kid.
Oh, shit. I thought you were going to say you hadn't seen Back to the Future. I was going to flip a lid, but...
seen it. It's just been a long time since I've seen it. So I remember liking it back then.
You didn't like Terminator 2?
Terminator 2. Does that have time travel in it? Yeah, but he just
The entire Terminator franchise is predicated upon time travel.
But I've only seen Terminator 2. I've never seen any of the other. Is that the one with the liquid man?
Yeah.
The guy that turns to goo?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the only one I've seen.
Metal alloy. Okay. Well, all right.
Looks like your eye's going to pop out over there.
So you've seen that one. Did you not like that one or did you like that one?
That one I thought was pretty good, but they weren't like jumping back and forth in time.
I don't think there's that many movies where they jump back and forth in time. I think it's either, you know, you time travel to wherever you're going to be, or someone time travels to you and the movie goes on. A couple of these movies are kind of unique in that perspective.
Yeah. I think when the movie kind of does a lot of jumping around, that's where I start going, wait a minute. How is this working?
Did you like Pulp Fiction?
I've never seen Pulp Fiction.
What? Wow.
I've only seen their little dance sequence thingy. That's the only thing I've ever seen of it.
That's so little of the actual movie. That's amazing. You've never seen Pulp Fiction.
Mm-mm.
It was a touchstone in the mid-90s of cinema, and you never saw that.
Nope.
Wow. was it something that turned you away from it, or was it something that you just,
I just
never got around to it, and now it's just buried?
Yeah, I just didn't go to movies back then, mid-90s. I just wasn't something I was doing. And then it just never came up again where I was like, oh, let's watch this.
Yeah, it's up again now. We're going to watch that movie. All right. So I had seen this movie once before, and I didn't see it in theaters. I think we saw it on video. You and I, we rented it, or we bought it on Vudu or something. And well, no, wait, because we had just started dating when this came out on video. So I bought it on video and I watched it. So years ago when this first came out. But anyway, do you want to tell everybody who's involved in this motion picture, including the author of the original graphic novel upon which this is based?
Yeah, I know. You're just waiting for me to butcher that name. Edge of Tomorrow, this movie was directed by Doug Liman. It was written by Christopher McQuarrie, Jez Butterworth, John Henry Butterworth. And it was based on the novel All You Need Is Kill by Hiroshi Sakurazaka. I hope I did that good.
That's pretty damn good.
I practiced on that one. I was like, oh boy, I better try and say this a couple times.
Now, before you get to the cast, Christopher McQuarrie was known for his script for The Usual Suspects. And then Tom Cruise apparently snapped him up as his own personal scriptwriter or something. But if you look at this dude's portfolio of films, it is full of Tom Cruise movies. Every Mission Impossible movie you can think of.
Oh, really?
The Jack Reacher movies, The Mummy. I mean, he has done a crap ton with Tom Cruise. He even did. Do you remember that Cruise movie that came out a while ago? Oh God, it's probably been over 10 years now. It was called Valkyrie. It was about the plot to kill Hitler. Do you remember that? It's an older movie, but he did that one. But he's done just about anything that you can think of that Tom Cruise has been in. In fact, let me look at it here real quick. Hang on. Yeah. He is doing the screenplay for Top Gun Maverick, or did the screenplay for Top Gun Maverick. He's doing Mission Impossible 7 and 8. He's doing it's called Untitled Tom Cruise SpaceX project, which has been announced. This dude and Tom Cruise are buddy-buddy.
I see.
I just found that fascinating that there's this writer that just writes for Tom Cruise, basically, and a couple of other things as a side hustle, you know? He's Tom Cruise's personal writer.
Well, I suppose if anybody's going to have a personal writer, it'd probably be Tom Cruise.
Then they probably get the Scientologists to get him that writer. That's what it was.
It very well could have been. Mm-hmm. You never know.
Make our boy look good. Who else is in this movie besides Tom Cruise?
So Tom Cruise plays Cage in this movie. Emily Blunt is also in here playing Rita. We have Brendan Gleeson playing General Brigham. Bill Paxton plays Master Sergeant Farrell. We have Jonas Armstrong playing Skinner. Tony Way as Kimmel. Kick Gurry as Griff. Franz Drami, something like that, as Ford. Dragomir Mrsic is Kuntz. Is Mrsic? How do you say that?
I don't know.
You're just waiting for all these names to come up.
I love it.
Yeah. And I think, is that most of the... We got Charlotte Riley as Nance. I think that's most of the main ones that we see. Two main ones is Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt.
Right. Emily Blunt plays Rita what?
It is Rita Vertaski.
Oh, you did it. Okay. Vertaski. Cool. Yeah. Awesome. I'm glad. I'm proud of you.
I don't know why you have such a glee of me mispronouncing names.
I just think it's funny to watch you just trip over them all the time. I don't know why. Schadenfreude, I guess. I don't know.
Point and laugh.
Yeah, basically. All right. So I'm going to dive in with my summary, and you can laugh at me tripping over my tongue as I try to read this.
Yeah, but you can edit that out.
That's true, and I will. An asteroid falling in Germany precipitates a massive global war between the mimics, aliens that arrived on the asteroid, and humanity. 5 years into the war, the United Defense Force has won its first victory against the aliens in the French city of Verdun, led by Sergeant Rita Vrataski in a newly designed mech suit. This battle goes so well that the higher-ups in the UDF decide that now is the time to invade mainland Europe to push back the invading mimics, lest they make it to England and then eventually across the pond to North and South America. General Brigham orders Major William Cage to cover the pending military invasion, but Cage runs, so Brigham has him arrested, busted down to private, and sent to fight with J Company. The invasion is a failure. Most of J Squad are killed, while Cage uses a Claymore mine to kill a blue mimic. Its blood covers him, and he is also killed by the Claymore. Cage starts awake, back to where he started, at Forward Base Heathrow, about to meet J Company for the first time. Everything plays out the same, and Cage continues to loop back to his awakening at Heathrow. During one loop, Cage decides to try and change some things. He attempts to save Rita Vrataski, who he witnesses killed in the invasion in a previous loop. She tells him to find her when he wakes up. When Cage reawakens, he goes to find Vrataski, who takes him to meet disgraced Dr. Carter, who explains that the mimics have an Omega, which controls an Alpha, which controls the mindless mimics of the hive mind. If the Alpha is killed, the Omega has the ability to reset the timeline and adjust the battle strategy in order to win the war. Cage gained this ability when he was exposed to the blood from the Alpha. Cage gained this ability when he was exposed to the blood from the Alpha. Vrataski, Cage, and Carter begin a plan to find the Omega and kill it, ending the alien invasion. Cage loops dozens more times, each time training with Vrataski to become good at combat while also bringing back further information needed to end the war. Cage and Vrataski eventually infiltrate the Ministry of Defense, cornering General Brigham and explaining the situation to him and asking him for an experimental device created by Dr. Carter, which the pair will use to locate the Omega. Brigham orders the pair captured and a car chase ensues, during which Cage uses the device to discover that the Omega is under the Louvre Pyramid in Paris. Cage is injured in the ensuing car crash and awakens to find that he is receiving a blood transfusion, which will cleanse his body of the ability to time loop. With one last chance to save the world, Vrataski and Cage recruit J Company and head for Paris before the invasion begins. Most of J Company sacrifices themselves so that Cage and Vrataski can reach the Louvre. Once there, Vrataski lures away the Alpha guarding the entrance, and Cage plunges into the water below the pyramid to destroy the Omega. Having killed Vrataski, the Alpha gives chase, mortally wounding Cage before he can swim down to the Omega. But he managed to drop a belt of activated grenades, killing the Omega and washing Cage in its blood. Cage reawakens again at Heathrow Airport, but this time he's in an altered timeline, one in which the mimics are weak without their Omega to guide them. And that's how you win the war.
So right off the bat, I'm not sure I understood the whole mimicking thing. So I understand that he got bathed in the blood, which caused him to be able to reset his day every day.
If you are looking for a rational explanation for why him getting bathed in the blood and dying gives him the ability to reset time in general, you're going to go crazy. That's not even my question. Oh, it's
I'm giving
not?
It that. I'm giving okay. it that.
Okay. Oh, good. Because don't question that, because you're just, that is a road to insanity.
That I'm just giving it that part. But what she was saying before was that the Alphas also have the ability to reset the day. Mm-hmm. So if the Alphas can reset the day and he can reset the day, how can they both reset the day at the same time?
I don't know.
Okay. That's where I was saying, like, sometimes these movies, I'm like, okay, I got to not think about that stuff and just watch it for what it is, because otherwise I start like going, wait, how is that working?
Let me throw another little thing at you here. Okay. How does Vrataski know that she lost the ability? She would have to die and not be able to come back. And then she wouldn't be alive to tell Tom Cruise that she has lost the ability. You can't test the theory. She could very well still have the ability.
Well, he did say that he felt different like when he woke up. So maybe that is what they were trying to give us for the reason.
But why would they make that leap from I feel a little queasy now or I feel a little different to
right? It could just be lost my
ability to do, yeah, I just lost my ability. Can't do my special power thing no more.
Okay, yeah, so I'm in agreement with you. That was one of my notes. Was okay. Like, how the heck do they know that?
Good, good.
So at the end then, is he a mimic again?
He's not a mimic ever.
Right, but he has the mimic ability.
Well, yeah, but that doesn't make him a mimic. A mimic is just the ill. That's the other thing. I don't understand why they're called mimics. What does that have to do with anything? They don't explain that.
I think it's
just
our terminology for
what it is. They call them mimics, but what does a mimic do? A mimic copies something, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's speech or outfit or something, right? Why are these things called mimics? Why not call them, I don't know, aliens, invaders, xenomorphs? I don't know, something other than mimics, because you don't explain why they're, what are they mimicking? They haven't mimicked a thing. What are they mimicking? Like sunflowers or something? I don't, what are they mimicking?
That's a good point, because the only two people that we know of that are aware that it mimics the day over again is
that's not a mimicking a, okay that's not that mimicking is not okay what they're doing
that's
is not,
what I went with that mimic is yeah, that they're calling it mimic because it made you start the day over, which isn't exactly mimicking, but maybe it was like kind of adjacent mimicking. I guess that's kind of where I was rationalizing it.
But that's not even a definition of the word. These guys, like, they were way off in a lot of like naming things. Like, first off, they named this movie Edge of Tomorrow. Fine. That's great. Great. Right. But then they advertised it with the slogan Live, Die, Repeat. And every person out there that just, I don't know, didn't bother to read the title of the movie and just thought that the slogan was the title, is calling it Live, Die, Repeat. So half the people don't know what it's called. The other half of people know what it's called and don't know what those people are referring to. It's like,
I have some information on that.
But if you look at the poster of this movie, they did not design that poster well. First thing you see is Live, Die, Repeat. And then the name is down at the bottom. These guys effed up in the naming. They effed up in naming mimics. They effed up with their time travel crap. Anyway.
So according to what I was reading, they changed their marketing strategy when the film did not perform as well in the United States. They added that Live, Die, Repeat as a more bold verbiage on the labeling and marketing. And so Warner Brothers maintains that the title of this movie is still Edge of Tomorrow. However, because of the way they did the Live, Die, Repeat, it was on the spine of the movie, that like a disc cover. It's on the spine of the disc cover. It is like on our Vudu. It says Live, Die, Repeat, and Edge of Tomorrow is in tiny, tiny little words at the bottom. So because of the way they did all this, when you go search this movie, you have to look under L because it's coded or sorted under L in almost everything because of the way they changed their marketing. I don't know if that was a good idea. I mean, I understand you're probably trying to get more people to watch this when it didn't perform well right off the bat, but I think that made it super confusing.
They did the same thing with Birds of Prey, right? Because Birds of Prey movie was Birds of Prey and the Emancipation of One Harley Quinn, right? Or the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. And then they changed it to Birds of Prey. And then they changed it to Harley Quinn, : Birds of Prey. Come on, man. Make up your mind. You are going to confuse the shit out of people. I have a major league problem with them altering the names of things like that. Now think about this. There are people out there who think that in Raiders of the Lost Ark, that they think that the title of the movie is Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark because of the way that they've marketed it on home video in recent years. That bothers me because that title of that film is not Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. It is Raiders of the Lost Ark, period. Right? This movie is Edge of Tomorrow. That's what the people that own this movie say it is. Mm-hmm. And I understand what's in a name. yada, yada, yada. But think about this. I don't know if we've talked about this one before, but I've got a major freaking cup of haterade for this particular series of movies titles. The First Blood series of movies, right? The first movie was called First Blood. First movie's called First Blood. Fantastic, right? The second movie is Rambo, First Blood Part 2. We're still on track. Then we get to Rambo 3, which makes no sense because there's not a Rambo 1 or a Rambo 2. There's only a First Blood and a Rambo First Blood Part 2, right? So it should have been First Blood, Rambo First Blood Part 2, either First Blood Part 3 or Rambo First Blood Part 3. Then they go straight to Rambo. After that, it goes First Blood, Rambo First Blood Part 2, Rambo 3, Rambo, and then it goes to Last Blood. What kind of crack are these people smoking? It's just confusing as hell. Anyway, back to this movie. Edge of Tomorrow being renamed Live, Die, Repeat is annoying as shit. I don't care who hears me say it. I don't care if people roll their eyes at me. That is dumb, and I hate it. Anyway.
Should we talk about what the movie is actually about a little bit? We've gotten to title and mimics.
Well, yeah, okay, sure. I mean, let's talk. Okay, so let's talk about this a little bit. The concept here is that he has a chance to stop this invasion or stop to push back this invasion, right? But both he and Bertaski know that getting bathed in the blood of an alpha gives you the power to go reset your day and start over, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why haven't they brought this to the proper authorities? Why haven't they brought this to the higher ups?
They tried to, because remember she said that she was then put into jail, and then the other time that they started dissecting her and studying her brain and stuff.
Okay, now that's fine and everything, but now there's two of them. This phenomena has been repeated, right? Why aren't they doing this? And why don't they bring this Carter guy to somebody other than Brigham? Why don't they just go to somebody else? There's not one person in charge of the entire war. There's not one person in charge of the entire defense of the world.
See, I took it as she tried. I mean, as she was talking the thing, to me, it sounded like she tried several times. And that's why she said, don't bother doing that. It's a waste of time. Man, so I feel like it was explained enough for me. That yeah. She tried and it didn't work.
It bugs me that they didn't weaponize this, right? What they should have done is they should have, because they could have easily proven this to themselves, to the general or whatever, right? Just the same way he did it with her. She told him to, you know, find her when she comes back, right? When he comes back, right?
Right, but she'd done it before, so she believed him.
But you can take something, just like he did with the J Company people. He knew where the cards were. He knew what each person did. That's how he convinced mm-hmm. them, right? He convinced mm-hmm. them with the exact same things that he could use on the general.
But he did that on the general. The general still tried to have him shot when he was leaving the office because he was giving the general all that information just to get him to open the safe. He gave him the thing out of the safe, but then he had everybody, you know, go after him.
I'm saying cut out the part with the where he's going to get the piece of technology from the safe and bring it to the general. Say, you can use me. We can figure out how to stop this.
Sure.
Not, hey, we're going to go rogue. Give me that thing.
No, I don't know. Right? I'm okay with it because I think that they tried it.
No, you can prove it too. He can prove it too. He says, he could say, hey, general, tell me something that only you would know that I can repeat to you when I come back to you the next time we loop around. And when he tells him something, you just take your gun out and you blow your own head off. And then the next time you get to Heathrow Airport, you go straight to the general again and say, hey, general, guess what? I'm going to tell you blah, blah, blah. And then you say, look, I have this power to loop time and we can use it to our advantage because that's what they're doing. But no, you've got to have him run from the general and you've got to have him like try and go rogue. There's it, absolutely no reason to go rogue in this movie. He goes rogue because of lazy screenwriting, I think.
Now, I disagree with that. I think they did a good enough job for me to say that they had tried that, because that was my assumption. She tried that. It didn't work. And so she was like, let's not even waste our time with that. So.
Why is she doing yoga on the firing range?
I don't know. She's just trying to prove how badass she is.
This is the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
It's an full metal bitch, you know.
It's an active fire range. People are shooting downrange, and yeah, she is over on the side doing yoga with those spinning, like, fake, you know, whatever's flying around her. What?
Yeah, that was weird. So one of the things I thought in the beginning, so the first couple of sequences where he was starting over, I thought were interesting, kind of to see him like, what the heck is happening? You see the first time through, the second time through, it's confusing. Mm-hmm. But then it went on a little long, like they went through it too many times. Yes. Almost, I think. Now the movie was a shorter movie, so I think they were probably just trying to fill time with this. And also I read that Tom Cruise wanted to make sure that those deaths were comical. So it was kind of scary, comical type of thing happening. But it got almost repetitive, where maybe if they took some of that out, and maybe they could have pursued some of what you were saying, not as much action-y stuff happening there, but maybe it would have moved the storyline where somewhere you would have been okay. But I did like how towards the end of the movie, they started telling us that he'd been through those parts by not showing us over and over, but by him just using words like, I've never gotten past this part, or they always attack us at this point, or something like that. So that way we knew he'd been through this before. We don't know how many times, but we didn't have to see it every time, you know?
Yeah, they definitely went a bit overboard with the loops. And you saying Tom Cruise wanted to make them comical and wanted to make it keep going, man, I hope he never gets behind a camera, dude. I hope that dude is never directing anything, because damn. Like, he just, like, you know that guy in the party that just keeps telling jokes and keeps being obnoxious and he just doesn't quit? That's what that feels like. That's what that feels like. Although, this is definitely a Tom Cruise movie. It has two of his signatures in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, do you know what they are?
No.
Tom Cruise running at full tilt and Tom Cruise on a motorcycle.
Oh, those are his two signatures.
You could find those in everything he does. Everything he does. Full tilt boogie running and then on a motorcycle. He full tilt boogies runs in The Firm, for Christ's sake. That's a lawyer movie. Who runs in a lawyer movie? Tom Cruise. That's who. But anyway, I digress. So I did think, I want to give this movie a couple of compliments, because I know I feel like I'm trashing it a bit.
Yeah.
But I do think it was pretty cool that they used the time loop to train him. I thought that was a neat idea.
Yeah.
Because then in the span of, you know, if he does that 24 times, that's a day's worth of looping, but it's, you know, it's 24 hours worth of looping, but it's more than a day's worth of looping. It's 24 loops, right? So like it's like 24 days, even though it would only be like, you know, a short period of time, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. He could get like a huge amount of training in a short period of time. I thought that was neat.
I also liked the character Rita Vertasky.
Mm-hmm.
I liked that they had the female lead, kind of the, you know, badass in this movie.
Yeah, it was neat because, okay, so here's something that's cool about this movie is that it kind of flips the script a little bit on the classic like action movie trope of the guy, you know, being the guy leading the charge and the woman being the one who's like, I don't know what's going on. Oh my goodness.
Like,
you know?
She's the one doing the training montage.
Right.
She's the one training him, you know?
Yeah. I do enjoy that because it's refreshing. It's definitely refreshing. Although at one point she kind of like when she first talks to him, she talks to him when she's training him, she talks like she doesn't like they don't have a day, like less than a day to reach the beach, you know, to hit the beach before they mm-hmm. fight. She's just kind of cash about it, you know, like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, we're going to train you. You'll be fine. Like, all right.
Yeah. Well, she knows that he'll be able to go over and over again.
That's true. I suppose she realizes she's got plenty of time to do yoga on the firing range, right? Is that what it is?
Yeah. And she shoots him lots of times too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. She did shoot him a bunch. That's comical. That's ha 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 funny. Did you notice that Dr. Carter was Hitler?
Dr. Carter?
He's the guy that came up with the device that they used at the end of the movie.
He's Hitler?
He's Hitler. In Preacher, he plays Hitler. That's the dude that plays Hitler.
Oh, yeah, Preacher. He does. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So I wrote, hey, it's Hitler. It's probably the only time I'd ever put that with an exclamation point. Unless I saw Hitler burning and be like, hey, it's Hitler. Look at that. Good for you, Hitler. Burn up. Anyway.
Well, that's okay because I did the same thing with, what's the guy's name? Gleason, was it?
Oh, yeah. Brendan Gleason.
Yeah.
Who's he to you?
Mad-Eye Moody.
Ha, interesting. He's the dad in 28 Days Later to me. Frank, the one that gets the blood in the eye and loses his mind.
Yes.
He's also been in tons of other things.
I was going to say, he's in lots of stuff. Lots of stuff.
Indeed he is. So, do you have any other notes?
Well, since this is an Emily Blunt arc, should we maybe say how we thought she did in the movie? Like how she portrayed the character, or do we want to skip that?
No, I think we can skip that. I think we're talking about it now. You said you liked her as a badass. I said I liked the fact that she was kind of the lead and everything. I have one other note real quick before we move on. I did not like the end of this movie.
Okay.
I did not like the end of this. It's too tidy. He gets washed with the blood of the thing. And so now all of a sudden he loops back again. So he lives. Look, the sacrifice means nothing if you just come back. It means nothing. It's hollow. It's an absolutely hollow ending at the end of this movie.
Yeah.
Just let him die. It's okay that he dies. He dies saving. The arc then for him is that he goes from coward at the very beginning to saving the entire world through his death, even though he knew he was going to die, even though he went down there to die specifically and blow up the Omega. He dies a hero, even though he was a coward at the very beginning of that movie.
Okay, not only that, but here's another thing where I was kind of wondering. So if he's supposed to start the day over and he dies, how the hell are they starting the day over again in a different like timeline or reality? I don't know. That completely didn't make sense to me.
It doesn't, because what that does is that it actually sidesteps all the rest of the quote unquote science in the science fiction film, where they're saying that, you know, they can loop time, they can go back and they can repeat time. Never once is it implied that they can loop through, like, that never mentioned at all that they can jump from universe to universe. That's never mentioned. There's never even a theory put out there about that. It's not
or seated. Alternate the past,
right? Yeah, there it's not seated, so you can't pay it off. It is like Pamela Voorhees being the bad guy in the original Friday the 13th. It's so far out of left field because it's completely unfair to the audience to expect them to believe that at this point. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, nothing has been put out there that's what happens.
Right.
Right. Plus, if he reset time to back before he goes into the general's office, how's the Omega dead?
Right.
You can't just, it didn't say that you could reset time and play with the stuff that you wanted to. Otherwise, these mimics would have won a long time ago. Reset time, eliminate the American for the American Jesus, look, the UDF forces, and let them, you know, let the mimics just roll right over, right? If that was the actual thing that they could do, but it doesn't. He resets time to before he goes into the general's office the first time, which means the Omega would have to be alive, but it's not.
See, this stuff makes my brain hurt.
The ending makes no sense, and and it cheats him of his character arc. It cheats him of his character arc.
It's, I agree.
Completely frustrating.
I agree.
Okay. So that being said, do you have any Jennifer's trivia tidbits?
I do. I have a few things here.
Bits. Cool. Okay.
Yeah. This movie was filmed in England almost entirely at the Leavesden Studios.
Okay.
This film is also supposed to take place in 2020. Now, I don't know if I remember seeing that anywhere, but apparently it must have been somewhere.
I didn't see it anywhere either. But what happens is, in 2015 is when the asteroids fell in Germany, and 5 years later is 2020. So it takes place in 2020.
Okay.
Yep.
So like we said before, this is based on the manga and novel, All You Need Is Kill by Hiroshi Sakurazaka. Hiroshi said he got the idea for the story from video gaming.
Nice.
You're resetting a game over and over until you find the winning strategy. So that there, I think, is cool. I wish I could have maybe fine-tuned it a little bit into the movie to make that gel a little better, but I think that's a super cool idea.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Have you read any of that stuff?
Okay. No, it's a young adult novel, as I understand it, and I haven't read the manga, so I don't know. I think the manga is an adaptation of his book. I think it was written by another author, the manga. So
okay. Yep. Now, also in the manga, the reason why Rita uses a melee weapon is because during her resets, she would often run out of ammo. So they brought that part through into the movie, but they didn't really say why she used the melee weapon in the movie. But I thought that was a good idea to bring that over into the movie.
You said that was in the manga or was in the book?
It was in the manga.
Okay. I wonder if that was added from the book. I think I might like to read this book because I want to know if they explain in the book why the hell they're called mimics.
Or maybe they're not even called mimics in the book. You never know.
Maybe they're called something better than mimics, because that's a stupid damn name for nothing. For something that doesn't mimic a damn thing, that's a stupid name.
Yeah.
Maybe like calling people like, hey, look, it's a 2-footer and they have 3 feet. What? Come on, you dummies.
The metal suits that the actors wear are about 85 to 95 pounds. So those are heavy suits that they had to lug around.
Got to be in good shape to be able to do that.
One other crossover in this movie to another movie we're watching next, Looper. Oh. The house where they're resting is the same house that's in Looper.
Really? I'll have to look at that.
Yeah, we'll have to look because I saw it there and I was trying to envision it in my head. But, you know, with movies, you could change sets around and stuff like that. So, it's hard to know for sure. But
sure.
And this movie, I have a couple alternate castings.
Oh, sweet. Okay.
For Bill Cage, we've got Brad Pitt.
Maybe.
Or Ryan Gosling.
No. Brad Pitt would work because Brad Pitt, this seems like one of those Brad Pitt movies that he does so that he can get money and he can go off and do his own shit, you know?
Yeah. And I have one for Rita Vitasky, and it is Berenice Bejo.
She was in
A Knight's Tale and The Artist.
Oh God, I haven't thought about that movie, A Knight's Tale, in freaking forever. And now you bring it up again and here we go. Yeah, that's the rock and roll jousting movie that when I saw them jousting to rock and roll, I was like, I'm out, done. Nope. I'm out.
I have not seen The Artist, so I don't know how well she did in there, but I know A Knight's Tale, while I know you hate it, I thought it was fine just for enjoyment purposes. It's not a good movie by any means. It's just, it has some moments that were entertaining in there, but she was okay in there, but I don't know. It was an okay movie, I guess.
I've never seen her because I haven't seen The Artist. So
all right.
I don't know who she is.
So that's all I have for trivia notes.
No alternate casting for Bill Paxton's character.
Nope.
Uh-uh. Good. Good, because Bill Paxton is a goddamn national treasure, and it's a sad thing that he's dead. So he died years ago, many years ago, not many years ago. He died a few years ago. But yep, R.I.P. Bill Paxton. You were a great character actor, dude.
I agree.
Yeah. All right. So we're gonna wrap this with: did you like this movie?
I do like this movie. I think it's kind of a fun movie. Like I said, with these sci-fi movies, if I'm going to watch it, it definitely has to be something I have to shut my brain off, because otherwise I start getting really confused on things. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of sci-fi movies, honestly. But there is enough action and stuff in here. And I liked the character thing. I thought the repeat thing went on a little too long in there. But other than that, I've seen this 3 times, which it's not very often for movies that I watch movies over and over again.
That's true. That's true. I myself, man, I have some serious problems with this movie, like serious problems with this movie. And it's not just, I mean, it's not like I just hate Tom Cruise or something, because I like plenty of movies that Tom Cruise is in. This movie is so hit and miss from the jump, from its spotty sci-fi, from its spotty like naming, to its just absolutely mind-bogglingly bad ending. I have some problems with it, but mm-hmm. when we get to like certain things, like the comedy stuff, like him getting shot by her a bunch of times, and you know, the repeat stuff there that kind of amuses you while you're trying to wait for the story to get to what they're doing, mm-hmm. that stuff hits. I mean, the comedy hits.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just misplaced in certain spots. I think there's too much of it in other spots, but I think that what they do is good as far as comedy goes. Overall, I'd have to say, no, I don't think I do like this movie very much. I mean, I like parts of this movie. How about that?
Yeah, that works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like parts of this movie. So next we are doing what?
Next week we are going to cover Looper.
Looper, directed by Rian Johnson, the creator of one of my favorite Star Wars movies ever. I don't care what anybody says. That's The Last
All right.
Jedi. The Last Jedi, he made that one.
I don't know which one that is.
The middle there's of the last trilogy.
I was going to say, there's too many Star Wars movies. So is it, so it's the one in the last one, the second one?
There is The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi, and The Rise of Skywalker.
Ah, okay.
And he did The Last Jedi. It was the middle one. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. It's the one with the salt planet, where it's red and it's got the salt covering it. And Luke has that battle with Kylo Ren, the lightsaber duel with him, but he doesn't, he's not actually there.
That scene was so cool looking with the white and the red. That was just super awesome.
That's a fantastically shot. And I think we'll get into it, but I think Looper is actually a very, very beautiful film as well. So we'll get into that as well.
We'll talk about that next week.
All right, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week on the couch.
Thank you for listening to A View from the Couch. We value your feedback. Please consider leaving us a review on Podbean, iTunes, or your preferred podcast listening app.
You can reach us on Facebook by searching at A View from the Couch, on Twitter at View_Couch, or by emailing us at aviewfromthecouch@yahoo.com. Thanks again for listening. Bye.
See ya.